Hello and welcome to Inside the Artist. My name is Rachel Corman. I have a very special guest today. Her name is Kimberly Crossman. She is a doll. We worked together on the show Smilf, and it was really great to sit down and chat with her. She was so sweet. She got us some almond croissants. So it was a nice little like morning chat over some almond croissants and some coffee. She is not only an actress, she is a TV personality. She is an author. She is a writer. She does a lot of things. And as you will hear in this interview, you will see that she's just a hustler, man. She travels a lot to New Zealand for work, which is where she's from. You'll hear all of it in our interview. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my interview with Kimberly Crossman. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good. I've got a belly full of almond croissants.
So. They're so delicious. Thank you so much.
I ordered them myself.
You did?
I did.
Where are they from?
I actually have no idea. Uber Eats brought them to us.
Oh, I love it.
This podcast is sponsored by...
by Uber Eats. Ooh, I should do that. Yeah. I should first ask you, how's your arm doing? Didn't you just break your arm?
I did. I have what's called stiff wrist, so that's hilarious. So I have to go to physical therapy. But yes, I broke my arm snowboarding showing off.
Oh, no.
That's all right. I was showing off, so it was a good ego check. But yes, that was a really fun experience to go through pilot season with a cast on my arm. I managed to bribe my doctor into slitting the cast so I could take it off for auditions.
And are you serious? When you'd put it back on?
And then we put it back on. So yeah, I was testing for a show and they were like, it looks kind of like you've had some kind of stroke because I was just like not using the arm. They're like, try and put it on your hip or something, which is quite hilarious.
But so yes, the doctor agreed.
Yes, he was a big fan of the actor that I was testing opposite. So he thought that he felt like if it was successful, he was part of the success story. So it worked.
So you kind of pitched it to him?
I did. I was like, hey, look, what can we do here? so yeah, he was awesome.
So when did you first decide you wanted to be an actress?
So my mother is a ballet teacher. So I kind of grew up performing and dancing and acting in the weekends. But she was also, you know, working really hard to send me to a private school. So I wasn't allowed to audition. That was kind of the rule until I finished school. Funnily enough, I fell over cheerleading and broke my elbow, was in a cast. So she was like, okay, you can audition.
I'm sensing a theme here.
There is a theme. Yeah. I ended up auditioning for a soap opera and booking a series regular on it when I was 15. And yeah, ended up, it was about at the year mark where they would kind of give you year contracts, and I'd had the most amazing year. I was like, oh, I don't want this to end. I guess I'd never really thought that this was a possible career path as such. It was just fun at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted it. It just didn't really seem like a tangible goal at that stage. And when that year came up, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want it to end. And I think that was kind of the aha moment of, okay, like, well, hopefully it doesn't end. So I ended up doing like 7 years on that show. And yeah, towards the tail end of it, was doing trips back and forth to the States for some hosting jobs. And I think that kind of planted the seed of like, oh, maybe I could do it in America too. So
you were pretty young to like have an idea of what you wanted to do.
I knew I wanted to perform. Mm-hmm. I think that, and I feel really grateful for that. I think, you know, I hear a lot of other people having that, not knowing what that drive is or what that light is.
Right.
But I can honestly tell you, like, any time between action and cut is where I feel, I guess, my most joy or my, yeah, it's also the time I'm the most present. I'm definitely a planner by nature, so it's really a, I don't want to say it's like a drug because I don't know a lot about drugs. I haven't dabbled. But like that feeling of, yeah, keep chasing it to me just feels the most like home or the most comfortable, or the most exciting. So yeah, I guess it was pretty clear early on that that was the, I was chasing a feeling. I guess I'm still chasing a
feeling.
Yeah,
that's a great way to put it, when you feel the most present, because we are so like busy in our thoughts and planning. And that I think just shows that you are on the right path and you are doing what you're meant to be doing if you do get that feeling from it.
Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, chasing a dream, but yeah, chasing that feeling, because it's I obviously want that feeling to be equated with a big successful show in the States, but I still get that feeling from working in New Zealand and stuff too, so it's
What did you learn from your experience on that soap opera?
A lot. I learned to memorize lines very quickly. I mean, we would do up to 22 scenes a day, so this is the second fastest turnaround television show in the world. So
definitely. Yeah, soap operas have a really crazy schedule, right?
Yeah.
They're really fast paced.
I mean, I think, man, I learned a lot of things through a lot of mistakes as well. The very first interview and publicity that I did, I was pitched. Oh, there's a motorbike outside. There were just certain things about control, and I did this photo shoot that was supposed to be for swimwear and summer, and it like a few months later, my mom and I were at the supermarket, and I was on the front of a performance car magazine at 16 years old.
Wow. So,
which sucked, because then you're kind of pinned as like an overly sexual. I mean, I hadn't even come into my own at that point, so that was really difficult to try and then undo it. So I think I learned to kind of take control of my own brand and how I'm represented after that incident. But
so you weren't happy with that?
No, my parents weren't either. Like, that's awful. Because it, you know, I was being, my character was a little risque kind of teenager, but that wasn't me, Kim. And so
right.
I really struggled with how you're perceived and presented to the public versus how you are in real life. And
did you do a photo shoot for it? Or
yeah, but I was pitched that it was just summer. So I was like, yeah, cool, of course. You know,
wow.
And I surf and do a lot of other things. So I was like, oh my gosh, yes, amazing. I get to wear like cool Billabong bikinis. And so to me, I was just completely naive. And
yeah.
I think that has been probably one of the biggest lessons in doing this is when you have to grow up. And I was lucky it was in New Zealand. I mean, you look and see how people have to deal with it here in the States on such a bigger scale. So yeah, it was a lot. But in terms of what I learned on set and doing the soap opera, to hit my mark, I'm a very good technical actress because you have to be. And I think that that served me really well. It's like the best training that you could get. So
I was going to say, did you go to drama school? Or that was like your drama school?
I guess it was kind of my drama school. But I did, in the weekends in New Zealand, I went to a school called AYA, which is Aspiring Young Actors. So it was kind of like improv in the weekends. So I was definitely acting. But yeah, I didn't have that kind of professional university degree, which I still don't have. So I've got no transferable skills. So hopefully this works out.
I think you're doing all right.
Okay,
I think you're doing all right. So what steps did you take from there? So the did the show end or did your character...
No, I made the decision to leave.
Okay.
Just because I felt like I'd learned everything I could have learned in that environment. And because I was doing so many trips out here for hosting and meeting and interviewing my peers, doing mainly Nickelodeon stuff, I think I was like, oh, if I don't make the jump, I'll always wonder what if.
Mm.
So that inspired me to... Which is funny, because as an actress, you're like, wait, I gave up full-time employment. I'm an idiot.
You're ready for the next step.
Yeah, I felt ready. And so, yeah, I made the decision to leave. But my character didn't die, so that's always good to know. On a soap opera, I can always return. But, yeah, it was... It felt like an easy decision at the time, because that's what I wanted to do.
How was the transition to the States from New Zealand?
I feel like I'm still figuring that one out. I still commute a lot because I work back in New Zealand still as well. But I think that the most surprising thing was that culturally we're very different, and I didn't really expect that. I think what the hardest thing is reminding myself that I signed up to be on this roller coaster. Because when the roller coaster is at its peak or it's going up and it's going great, everything's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I'm still trying to learn of like when it's on its way down or it's going through loops or, yeah, I think that's the hardest thing, to not have like your family or, you know, and it's a difficult town to make really solid friendships. Not to be negative about this town, I think it's just everyone is here for a reason, pursuing something, and that creates a different kind of human with a different set of goals. So, you know, we're not all sitting around with our Friday evenings free. You know, like, you could get an audition at any
everyone's
time.
Everyone's here. Everyone's hustling.
Everyone's hustling.
Yeah.
And whilst that's amazing, I think that it's not the most ideal breeding ground for really strong, meaningful relationships and friendships, because at any point you could book something if off to Canada. Or,
yeah.
You know, you're kind of always in this holding pattern, so...
So how do you get through those down moments? Like, let's say you are on hold for something and it doesn't come through. Like, how do you, what are things you do to kind of get through that?
Oh, man, I wish I knew. I definitely have a cry and have a shower. And then you have really no option. You can either wallow or you just get back on the horse and start again. I'm finding it increasingly more difficult because I'm getting closer, or the jobs are bigger, or the opportunity is bigger, or, you know, I've now done 5 pilots that everyone feels like it's going to go and right. It's going to change your life. And even in hindsight, like there's not a lot of signs or things that happen that make you doubt, you know, everyone wants it to work. So right. You get caught up in that. And I think a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, don't get excited until it's happening. But I don't think that's inherently in my personality. And you want to put everything into it as well. Yeah. So I'm not probably the ideal example for that. So I don't know. I think it gets a bit more difficult. But yeah, the only thing to do is really push forward. It's not easy, I want to say.
Yeah.
Because you feel sorry for yourself. You're like, oh man, come on. And it's exhausting because you're at the finish line almost. You can see it. And then they're like, no, thank you. You pick yourself back up and go back to the start of the race again. And
it's so hard. I don't know how. I mean, I don't know how actors do it.
Things are harder.
That's like, true. Like,
come on.
That's true.
I have to, like, in perspective, things are a lot harder. I think just emotionally for your confidence or your ego or your joy, it's... In many respects, you know, someone else is the puppeteer of controlling that success or not success. And as a planner by nature, that's a really difficult thing to give over that control. Like, no matter how hard I try or how good I am or whatever, that doesn't necessarily result in a win. And that's confusing at times because sometimes it's a political reason. It's like, oh, well, this guy's, he wanted this chick because it's his cousin's niece.
Right.
And you're like, cool, what?
So you don't take it personally when you don't get a role?
I think I've had enough wins in my bank that I can stand behind my talent. And that's not meaning to sound arrogant, just I feel that I know that I get enough good feedback that I can go, okay, that's fine. But that's also kind of the struggle too, so.
Yeah. But that's good. You have to have that confidence and remember the wins that you've had.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not complacent in my talent either. You know, I'm always working on it and studying. Like, anytime I'm in the car, I'm listening to Comedy Central stand-up. You know, I'm always making sure I'm absorbing and learning. But yeah, I mean, also no one's going to give you that answer. If you don't book a job, they're not like, here are the 5 reasons why you didn't. And it's never anything to do with you. It's like, oh, well, Jeff thinks you're too short. Or it's, you know, it's things you can't change.
So right.
Yeah.
So it's good. It sounds like you don't really take it to heart then.
No, I just want to work. I think that's the biggest thing. And so when you're not working, it's like, oh, what am I doing with my life?
But you are working. Like, you're always auditioning or you're interviewing. We should talk about the interview job you have. You host the Project New Zealand.
Yeah, so the Project New Zealand it's what we call digestible news. It's New Zealand's, I guess, half-hour news show, prime time. And because there's not a lot of pressing news in New Zealand, they have entertainment reporters, so I get to do the LA correspondence.
That's
stuff.
So fun.
Yeah, it is super fun. So it means I get to sort of see movies and interview amazing actors and directors for their films, and it's difficult because you only get 4 minutes in the room with them, which goes so fast, and it's got to be good. And sometimes I'm number 64 in line to interview them, so it's
are they just
nice.
In a room all day and people come in and out and ask them questions?
Yeah, they sit in a hotel room in a seat with lights on them and a camera, and the seat opposite them is just in rotating every 5 minutes.
Wow, so you gotta come up with some like witty
witty
zingers there to ask them.
Most of the time people are awesome, but yeah, you've definitely had a few duds. And a part of you understands if you're number 64, like how many times do they want to answer the same questions? But I found most of the veteran actors are the best because they understand what it is and it's a job, and they're giving each, you know, country the 4 minutes that they need to sell their movie that they're usually an EP or something on. So they understand it. It's kind of the greener actors or those kind of middle tier who think that that may be bigger than they are.
Oh, yeah, just, that's got to be kind of like, I don't need to answer your question.
Yeah, come on, bro. Remember.
You're like, we're all doing a job here.
We're all doing a job. One actor in particular was so out of it. I was like, man, he is high or something. And as I turned to, because I was like, this is the worst interview I've ever done. Just long pauses. I was like, oh my goodness. My God. And as I turned up to leave, I realized that he had put 2 coffee tables on top of each other and a laptop, and the Rams game was playing, like literally right behind my head.
He was watching it?
So he was watching a football game while you know, media had flown all across the world to interview him for a movie. So
obviously you're not going to say who that was, but
yeah.
Who's been the most, the most fun interview for you?
You know what? I interviewed Diane Keaton 2 days ago, and was awesome.
Yeah, I love her.
It was interesting because I think of someone of that caliber, she was really talking, if that makes sense, really listening and really talking, and it felt like having a coffee with a friend. It was the fastest 4 minutes of my life, but I think having that grace and that presence and ability to connect with people, that was really cool. I'm a huge Will Ferrell fan, so anytime I've interviewed him, I'm beat red, just like, be cool. Like I want him to love me so much that he's like, hey, you're funny, let's do a movie together. Which hasn't happened yet, but...
That's interesting perspective that I didn't think about with you, because you are an actress and you're a host, and that must go in your mind a bit.
Well, I mean, I'm putting my host hat on. I'm doing a job.
Of course, but
yes, there is like the small girl inside me that is like, I just want Will Ferrell and Adam McKay to be like, she was fun and witty. Come on.
You are fun and witty. I've worked with you, I know how funny and witty you are.
Thank you. Yeah, that would be amazing, but that's not the arena.
Right, you got to separate. But it's just something that I haven't thought about from your perspective of like that. Yeah, that's got to be in the back of your head of like, oh yeah, I'd love to work with these people.
Yeah, I guess it's funny because some people are like, oh, is it not an ego thing that you feel like lower tier interviewing these people? I'm like, no, not at all. Like I'm in a room and I get to be around them. Like surely that's a great. Like, I don't feel that way about it. I think it's amazing. So yeah, I'm really grateful for that, and it means I get to see some great movies and some shitty ones too for free.
Right?
Movies are expensive,
They're so expensive.
Yeah.
All right. What? How did you get that job? And like, how does it work when you do the interview here? Does the footage just get sent to New Zealand and they air it there?
Yeah, you leave with your little tapes and your
SD
card.
So you do all the producing?
I don't actually.
You
I
don't.
Just have to upload it to Hightail and they deal with it all in New Zealand. It's quite easy. But it's meant I've been able to travel a bit too. So I got to go to South Korea for Black Panther last year as well.
Wow.
So there's some travel involved, which is great. But yeah, it kind of came about. I just started hosting in New Zealand. I was the face of channel for Nickelodeon for a little bit. And through that was kind of doing interviews. And yeah, when the project started 2.5 years ago, it was just someone that they wanted someone on the ground, because otherwise you'd have to fly from New Zealand every week.
Yeah.
That's very expensive.
So you're saving them some money by living here.
I am. Yes, I am. So yeah, it's a great little kind of side hustle, and it's good to kind of stretch myself in that skill set as well.
So we have to talk Power Rangers.
Okay, yes.
Because I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask you about Power Rangers.
Yes.
You were the first Red Ranger.
First female
Red Ranger. Female Red Ranger.
Storyline-wise, there is in the Japanese kind of version, that character existed. So yeah, in terms of like US edition, yes. I have to be very clear on that because people will slaughter me.
Yeah, and I don't want to say the wrong thing. I'm not as much of a Power Rangers fan as my dear friend Frank Smith is. So,
shout out to Frank Smith.
Shout out.
Awesome.
Oh, I have some questions from him, which we will get to. I texted him yesterday and I was like, I'm interviewing Kim tomorrow.
What do you
want me to ask her? So I have some questions for you. But first of all, let's talk about how did you get the role?
Who was actually quite funny. So I had left Shelton Street, which is the show I was on in New Zealand, and I was like, I'm moving to America. And I did all these like women's mag stories, like our young girls flying the coop, you know, and kind of moved to America. I was here 3 weeks and auditioned for Power Rangers and got it, which shoots in New Zealand. So I very quickly packed up and turned
and then
around
you went back.
Back home, which is quite hilarious. But yeah, that was how I got it. I had to do some fight scenes in my audition as well, and I had never done any sword fighting before. So I didn't know what to do, so I took into the audition that inner tube of wrapping paper, like that kind of cardboard circle.
Right.
Thing, and just kind of, yeah.
And so you kind of used that as a prop?
Yeah, and just basically watched some Kill Bill kind of moves and did a lot of heavy breathing because that's what people do in sword fighting. You know, make it very intense. And yeah, nailed it.
And you nailed it, obviously.
I mean, it could have gone two ways. They're like, this chick is nuts. but they liked it. So
did you watch the previous Power Rangers to prepare, or what else did you...
I remember when Power Rangers, ironically, was actually banned in New Zealand because it was considered too violent. I remember that Kimberly was the first Pink Ranger, and so when we used to play Power Rangers at school, I had been like, she's pink and we have the same name.
I know.
Amazing.
I was going to say, did you wish you were the Pink Ranger?
Yeah,
so
that was
reason?
How basic of me. But yes, also because her name was Kimberly. But yes.
Also, we're both wearing pink,
yes,
can I just say?
Yeah.
We did not plan this,
we didn't.
But yeah, all up to your pink Uggs as
yes,
well.
Yes, I know. I've gone. I am wearing an indoor footwear, but I'm in my own house, so it's okay. it was a really cool moment to kind of get cast in that and feel like your inner child go, that's awesome.
That's so cool. And then from there, like, there's all these fans. You go to the conventions.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more than just.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah, it's really cool to have that
yeah.
kind of community because they're very loyal fans, and I'm all for it.
Love Speaking that. Of loyal fans, let's go to the questions.
Oh, yeah. Frank Smith, thank you.
So I had Frank on the show, and he shouted you out because he wrote Power Rangers fan fiction, which was a big inspiration to his writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he listens, so I wanted to call him out. Okay, questions from Frank. I just, like, want to read what he said. Just that she was the first female Red Ranger. How did that feel? And what's it like going to conventions? Did she watch the movie? What did she think? Did she keep in touch with the fellow Rangers?
Yeah, so our group was really cool, actually. I ended up kind of becoming very, very good friends with Alex Hartman's girlfriend at the time, Katie, and that was really awesome. And yeah, we have kept in touch. It's kind of dwindled over the past couple of years because not everyone's here in LA. But our cast was amazing. I have a lot of love for Steven Skyler. He was a great member of that cast, and we did a couple of music videos and stuff together.
Oh, nice.
Going to conventions is a riot. I honestly, it makes me feel a little insecure because you're supposed to charge people to have photos with you. And if you don't, but I was like, that's ridiculous. I'll just go along. I don't need to do this. But apparently you're supposed to charge people because that's what they're there for and they want to. It just makes me so uncomfortable.
Well, because you're so sweet and you would do it for free.
Of course I'd do it for free. Are you kidding? People lining up to get a photo with me, that's enough for my ego. But yeah, that was a really difficult thing for me to get over, is that people will actually pay to have you sign something.
What do you charge for that?
Oh, I think it was
like, what do they do?
The lowest tier that I could possibly charge and not feel like I'm robbing people. But, you know, people were happy to...
They want
to
meet you.
They value it. And,
yeah,
I always try and make sure. I think I learned early on that, not that you have to put on a face or anything like that, but I early on met some people that I really admired and they were just really disappointing. And so I think I always try and make an effort to make sure that my interactions with people, that I do look them in the eye and like ask some questions. And that was something that I felt was really important.
Well, it's back to the personal connection thing you said, like when you interviewed Diane Keaton, how you felt that personal connection. It sounds like you probably want to share that with people who come up to you.
Yeah, and also like respecting people's time. If I've taken the time to drive to Pasadena or come from Germany or anything, you know, I don't want to be a douche.
Do people come from all over the world?
Yeah, so like
oh
at that
gosh.
Time. Like,
am I so naive that I don't know that?
I didn't know that either. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So yeah, I think that's something that's really important to me, is to take time with people. And because, you know, great that I get to act and do what I want, but if you want... Fans is such a strange word, but if you want people to, you know, be invested in your journey, you have to give them a reason to do that. Like,
yeah.
In saying that, there are plenty of dicks in Hollywood who seem to be doing just fine, but that's not the story that I want to know.
Of course.
Like,
what's been like the most meaningful fan connection you've had?
I actually have this girl, Nicole Cato. She's a Kiwi girl, and ever since I kind of started on Shulton Street, and she was a huge supporter when I wrote my book and would like come out to signings and stuff, and we still keep in touch now. So I think, yeah, that's probably the most meaningful one, because I felt like I've seen her grow up through kind of her teenage years to the point that she feels like a peer. And yeah, writes me letters, like handwritten letters.
And she's
letters,
followed so. Your career too,
yeah,
so it's
so
both
it's,
ways.
It's really cool.
Aww.
Yeah, that was probably one of the most meaningful ones. And then I had a fan actually who got really sick and unfortunately passed away, but I spent a lot of time, she wanted to meet me, so I kind of spent a lot of time with her and her family in the hospital, and still keep in touch with her mom and her sister and stuff. So that kind of still holds a place in my heart.
That's really sweet.
Oh, not trying to be sweet. I mean, they were an awesome family, but yeah, just, you know. I think that's one of the weird things is when you're doing this as a career, sometimes there are opportunities where you can make an impact and help people, and I always try and keep that as the main focus, whether it's what I'm trying to say. I mean, so, you know, if you're on TV, you automatically have a voice that people either do or don't want to listen to, and I think there's a responsibility that if you do have a voice that people are listening to, that you do something good with it. Mm-hmm. Not that everyone has to do that, and there are plenty of people not doing that, but I guess for me, I feel like what I'm pursuing as an actor is such a selfish thing because it's really just chasing something for myself, that it's nice if you can kind of create a ripple effect to do some good as well. So
how do you...
makes my mother proud.
I think that's great. And I was just wondering, with all these things that you do with the acting and the hosting and the philanthropic, how do you balance all of that?
I like that there's so many questions to that. Like, I'm in such a season where I'm like, I don't know, Rachel, how to do it. I burn the candle at both ends and I get sick or tired. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that I am particularly good at balancing it. I'm not very good at taking care of myself. This is something that I'm trying to learn how to do, but... I don't know.
Taking the time for yourself.
Because I don't enjoy them. I'm like, boring. Like,
yeah.
What more could we be doing? And
well, in this industry, we're constantly hustling and constantly working. And it's like, if you do have a moment to take for yourself, whether it be a trip or whether it be a day for yourself, or it's important to do that because we don't realize how busy, at least I can speak for myself, like how busy my brain is day to day until I take that time. But we're just, I think... used to it here, and it's just the city as well. As you were saying, everyone here is hustling. It's hard to kind of do that.
And there's guilt involved too. Mm. If you do stop to smell the roses, you know, there are so many other things that you could be doing. And when you're in a competitive industry, you know, while you're sleeping, the competition comes creeping. So like there's all these kind of things. But yes, I need to be better about that because I'm not particularly good at balance. I have a goal in mind and I will do anything to achieve it. And that just in turn it doesn't mean that I'm a happy, peaceful, zen person all the time. So I do need to figure that one out. I'm working on it.
Fair.
Check in with me in a year. See how we're doing. Be even more frazzled. Like, I'm fine. I always feel like I'm like teetering on a breakdown, like that kind of like holding it together human being that you're like, but yeah, so, you know, I'll figure it out. Or I won't, one or the other.
I mean, you're constantly moving though. Like, I'm not worried about you. You're always going on auditions or you're busy.
Yeah.
Like after this, you feel like I have work, I have this.
I'm hosting trivia.
Amazing. Yeah. What? Tell me about that.
It's this app called Joyride. Most people know HQ, it's kind of like the other one, but it's not just general knowledge trivia. It's like film trivia, music trivia and stuff. So yeah, I do that. It's just down the street. So I do that pretty every day that I'm not doing something else. And I love it. It's great for many reasons. It's also because it's live. It's prompter. There's a chat thread that's not curated. So in terms of hosting, it's kind of the most difficult job that you could do because you've just got four screens and you're on your own and it's live and anything can happen. So it's really great practice for me.
And it tests your trivia.
It does. I've learned a lot. I've actually learned that I know nothing. That would be the majority. I'm like, how do people win this ever? Like, who are these people? But yes, so yeah. It's good. I really enjoy it.
That's fun. Yeah. See, you have like fun jobs though. It's not like you're going to an office every day. It's like every day something's different.
And if I'm coming across pessimistic, please call me out.
No, I don't think you are. I'm jealous. I'm like, it sounds fun. Like you just get to like do something different every single day.
I do. I will say on the flip side to that though, I have no day is the same, which sounds amazing. There's also like a slight exhaustion to that because I have no control over my schedule. I have no, you know, there are certain things that I'm longing for that series regular job where I'm like, okay, I know I'm working for 9 months doing this. And so I know that I'll be making money. Cause that's another part of it too. Like you have to keep hustling because you have, you know, it's expensive to live out here as well. So yeah, it's so twofold because it's great. No day is the same, but then every day is insane. So
you don't know where your next paycheck's coming
from. Exactly. And so every night you go to bed, I'm like, oh man, Here like, we go again.
What do we have tomorrow? All right, let's see.
Every morning my alarm goes off, I go, where am I? What day is it? Where am I supposed to be? It's like the first three thoughts. I always wake up, I'm like, where am I late? Where am I going? So, and I still use a paper calendar, which...
I love that.
Thank you.
To like, so you handwrite everything.
Yeah, because otherwise I just, for some reason,
iCal doesn't work.
Yeah. And my sister's like, hey, would you like to join us in the millennium? And I'm like, no, thank you. Paper calendar is where it's at.
I like that. And what, you just carry it around with you?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a dumb question. You carry it around with you. Yeah, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
I'm thinking, like, is it like a big paper calendar you, like, leave on, you know?
I mean, it's, I just take it with my laptop everywhere. I don't know why I do. It just helps me.
I like it. Sometimes they say, like, handwriting something helps you remember it more.
Yeah.
That's why I handwrite my notes here for the podcast. I typed them out on my phone, and then I was like, you know, I'm going to handwrite.
There you go.
Because it's nice.
You have great handwriting, too, by the way.
Oh, no, I don't. Really? Yeah. Oh, God, it's so sloppy.
I think it's lovely.
Thank you. I'm a lefty, so it's kind of hard to...
Creative.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
You know, do some creative things as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about your book called okay. Love You.
Have you read it?
I haven't yet.
Did you like it?
Oh, my God, I would. I read so about it.
I wrote a book 5 years ago back when I knew everything.
Did it all go away now?
Oh, 100%. To the point that people have screenshot things from my own advice and sent it to me. I literally peaked.
That's great.
I peaked way too early. I'm coming down the other side of it. But I feel like life is like that. Like, it's like a circle and, you know, you peak and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm great. Everything's going great. And then you forget everything. And then, yeah, it's just this whole cycle. So, yes, that was when I was at my peak and prime.
So tell me about what made you want to write a book.
I write a ridiculous goal every year that I have no idea how I'm going to achieve, just something fun. I wanted to write a book. I was reading, kind of like got into that self-help thing of, you know, I had just moved out here and I was, you know, read The Secret and was like, oh, I have to manifest and I don't know, whatever, you know.
I'm super into all that stuff, so like you're
and I know for, yeah. But you know, it's also we still have to live our lives as well, so
totally.
I'm on both sides of the coin. But yes, so I was like really into it and I was reading all these self-help books, but they were written by women who were a lot older talking about a time period which seemed so distant to them. So I was like, no one's written a self-help book for someone who's going like who's 16 to 24, who's just graduated that chapter of life. And mm-hmm. I felt like a lot of the things, although themes can be relatable, there are certain things, you know, in, you know, 2010 to kind of 2000 and where are we, 19, that are very different from when my mom was at school or what we're dealing with. So I was like, oh, that's so strange that nobody has done that. Or if they had, it was ghostwritten by someone else. And so... I had read Miranda Kerr's book, and it was ghostwritten. I remember being really disappointed. I was like, she didn't even fucking write this? Like, what the hell? So, can I swear on this?
Yeah, of course you can.
Good, great, perfect. Well, in that case...
No, I swore earlier. It's all good.
So I was like, oh, cool, let me write about the chapter in life in which I just graduated. I really wasn't trying to be like, hey, everyone, I've got life figured out, follow me. It was purely just, hey, I just went through this chapter, here's what I did wrong, here's what I would have liked to have done differently, here's what I learned.
Yeah.
But it was, the goal of the book was to turn it back on the reader with a bunch of questions after each chapter to kind of get your brain... Because I think we really do know everything. We just need to be reminded of what we know.
I agree with that, yeah.
And so sometimes some triggers or some questions or poignant questions maybe help kind of align things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything's so loud and noisy and chaotic. Sometimes it helps to be prompted to think about stuff. So I'm very, very proud of it. You know, I wrote it in 12 weeks, which was a really quick turnaround. And I am really... It's just funny to me that... Sometimes if I go back and look at certain things, I'm like, oh man, I knew this. So yeah, I was so wise back then.
It's kind of like a journal for you too, in a way that you can go back to and be like, oh, what was my advice for myself back then?
Yeah. And I keep coming back to the fact that, oh yeah, past Kim would know how to handle this. But future Kim, she ain't no shit. So yeah, it's funny and disappointing. So...
That's going to be so rewarding to share kind of your thoughts and your lessons with other people. And like, how has the response been from it?
I think that was the thing that I didn't expect. You know, there was an element that I really was doing it for other people, but also, yeah, to document my life to that point that felt authentic. But yeah, going around New Zealand and touring it, and I think the biggest realization for me was I grew up in a household where if I wanted to go and do something or achieve a certain career path, that was fine and accepted as long as I put 110% into it and, you know, was a healthy thing, or, you know, I was passionate about it, then my parents were on board. And I think going around New Zealand when I toured with it, realizing that that's not everybody's upbringing, or maybe they don't have parents in their corner who are like, what are you into? Let's strive for that, you know, or don't have that support or that confidence to kind of really flourish in what may be authentic to them was terrifyingly real. And I think that was cool to be, you know, or to provide them some text which helps people be like, oh, cool, I can do that and it work out. Or so, yeah, I think that was kind of the coolest thing, is if people didn't have that in their lives, that they were able to find it within themselves, because reading the book,
because you're really kind of guiding them and coaching them a bit about it, right?
I think that that coaching themselves, I think it's just, yeah, it's asking those questions that help people maybe make hard decisions. Or yeah, and that was cool. There was a girl who kind of always wanted to be a vet, but didn't want to be, didn't, you know, have the support, and kind of remember her being like, oh, I'm graduating. Oh, my cat just sniffed a candle and freaked out. So that was probably the most rewarding thing that I wasn't really expecting from it, that it did actually impact some people's lives, and that's really cool. And
but what I think is really cool about your career is we've touched on so many things across the board: acting, writing, hosting, and the common theme I see is, like, I feel like you just really love to, like, make people feel good about themselves and make people, like, you just want to help people.
Thank you. That's very kind. Yeah, yeah. I do. I mean, I have an amazing mother who is the most selfless person to a fault. I think, you know, I grew up in a household where you should always, and if you're in a position to help, lend a hand, you should do that. And yeah, a lot of people ask, like, are your parents proud of what you've done? And in terms of acting, not that they could care less, I just don't think that that's what they think it's great that I'm pursuing something. But, you know, my mother's happier if I'm selling cupcakes to help the SPCA raise money for animals or whatever.
I saw you're doing that right now. Aren't you going to be skydiving?
I am, yeah. So those kind of things, I think, make my parents proud in terms of that I'm not... I mean, I can be a dick at times, but most of the time, I feel like, hopefully, my heart's in the right place to try and do some good.
And paying it forward, have other people do the same. So, separate question. Yes. How did you get Obama to follow you on Twitter? I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure it was like bots or something that create, like.
Is he a Power Rangers fan?
He might be. I remember being in LA and the traffic was gnarly, and I was like, oh, should I message him? Because it was because he was in town. And I just direct messaged him saying, you in traffic too, bro? And like hoping that he would like see it or like think it was funny. He didn't respond yet. Maybe he will one day. I actually remember being quite freaked out when I found it, when it came through that. Yeah, Barack Obama follows you. I was like, oh my God, why? Like, what have I done? Am I on a list? But yeah.
I think now, it's so cool.
Now it's a power trip. Yeah. Me and him are boys. We're not at all. He's seen the message, didn't respond. So, you know.
Can you see that they see it?
Yeah.
Okay. You think he actually saw it, or what?
Sure, it's like someone being like, this chick, why do we follow her? What has she got? All she does is post cat content. What are we doing?
I love that. Are you in traffic too, bro? Were you like on the 405?
Yes, and I thought, oh, that's funny and witty.
I think it's funny and witty. Maybe that's why I followed you.
Yeah, maybe. Thanks, Rachel.
What is something you do daily that helps take you to your goals? Should we open your old book and see what you say in there?
How would past Kim answer this? Imagine if that's my narrative. Like, remember the old you who was together and had life figured out? What do I do daily that drives me towards my goals?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Is there like an action? Is it something you always read, or an email you always send, or an activity you do that just helps you?
Well, I think more than that is that I wake up in a country that is where none of my family is and I'm away from everybody. So I wake up with a huge thread of messages that's our family thread every morning. And I think I carry a lot of guilt for not being home and part of that. Not that anybody puts that on me. They're all stoked that I'm away here. But I think, yeah, I have a lot of drive to succeed here because I want to be able to have more control of my schedule or be able to go home more and not have to work when I'm home. Or, you know, there's this success level to me, which means I can kind of do all the things and I'm not there yet. So I think that would be my drive, to be honest, that I can be more a better daughter, a better sister and that kind of stuff. Because I miss out on a lot of things being out here. And that's important, you know. Just went to it, not to be so morbid, but went to a funeral recently, and it's like, you know, those moments where you're constantly reminded that the end of the day, it's about the people and the relationships, right. And, you know, that kind of hit home a little bit too, because I really am pursuing something with the goal that I will have more time eventually, and, you know, we don't have that, so I either need to figure out that balance now, or at least, yeah, I think that's the drive that keeps driving me, is it's aspiring to have kind of that bit of balance and time. So
you do travel back and forth a lot though, so it seems like, yeah, you do see your family a lot.
I do. It's just hard because I'm hard working, and right, it's a different kind of thing. But you know, there have been, you know, my best friend's baby's christening that I couldn't go back for. You know, there's just, yeah, certain things that require you to be a present individual, and when you're traveling a lot, sometimes you can't. And on the flip side, I'm also, you know,
there's sacrifices so many, you have to, yeah, make to go towards your goals.
Totally. And whilst I'm happy to do them, they do carry a bit of weight as well. You know, I have nieces and nephews who are growing up, and yes, I went back 13 times last year, but it was for a day most of the time. You know, so it's, yeah, just kind of, yeah, being, yeah, trying to carve out those times to just be focused and present with this little goal in the back of your head being like, you're not doing enough. Like, good. What? Sound insane. She,
no.
She talks to voices in her head.
No. Okay. We all have voices in our heads. We, yes, all do. It's comforting to hear someone who has had a lot of success be so open about, like, the struggles that go on in this industry, because I think what we see a lot is what's either on social media or we see them on TV, like, oh, their life's together, they have this job, they have all this money and this and that, but which it's is, like, that's not the case.
And that's terrifying too, because, yeah, I still think that when I'm an adult, I'll have it all figured out, which is, like, terrifying, because I'm like, wait, my parents didn't know what they were doing? What? Like, I'm still shocked by that.
We're learning every day.
Yeah, so that doesn't comfort me though. I'm like, I still aspire to have it all figured out, like, to at least to a point that I can calm the fuck down.
Yeah,
but I also know that it's constantly ever evolving. So
it is, but also your hard work pays off. I mean, you've worked, yes, on a lot of shows.
Yes,
you just did a couple pilots, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's so fun. I think that's it. It's like, you know, the glimpses that I've had of that, of the dream, have been the most amazing experiences. And I think too, it's really rewarding to be able to kind of play with the big boys in terms of, yeah, if a director doesn't call cut, being able to continue on a scene and improvise and it be funny, and then some of those things actually going into the final product, or that's a really cool place to be, where you feel like you're not, you know, you're actually adding value to a project. That feels pretty cool. So
and the connections you make as well, and the, yeah, relationships you build.
Like we're sitting here.
Like we're sitting here,
yes,
now.
Yeah.
What is the ultimate dream for you?
I'll tell you the goal. To create and star in a successful half-hour single-camera comedy. Successful American half-hour single-camera comedy. You know, I like looking at what, you know, Frankie Shaw has done, or Lena Dunham, or, you know, taking their own narrative and creating it. A platform to tell a story, tell a great story, and it be funny. So that's the goal. I had this experience on set of Smilf where I kind of got to kind of, I don't want to say shadow, but like follow Frankie around for the day.
Yeah.
Early on in season one. And, you know, just help do some camera testing for lighting and things. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been the goal and the dream for me, what she was doing. And having that experience to actually see it in the flesh. And I just remember coming home and bawling, because it was a very humbling moment to realize how much I don't know. Like, I thought, I honestly thought that I was ready for that
Interesting.
Moment. And I was like, I'm so pretty. I've got the idea. Like, I could do this in my sleep. I've been on set since I was 15. Like, all my ego talking. And to have that experience of me going like, oh, I know nothing. Literally nothing.
About show running a show?
Yeah. I mean, I do,
but I don't. About everything that goes like, into everything. A production.
Just that it was, you know, she's mid-conversation and someone's asking her about the wallpaper and seeing this and that. And then making a lighting decision and, you know. Yes, I'm sure if it's your show, you understand a lot of that. I just didn't understand the complexity and the pace and it was a very humbling experience. But also great because it goes, okay, cool, I now have seen where some of the holes in my knowledge are in terms of shot sizes or how lighting changes something. Like those technical elements that Kim as an actor, like I know how to do the performance side of things, but you need to have such a knowledge about the project as a whole and how it looks and what different lighting does to a mood and tone. And I was like, you know, it's a real symphony of a bunch of different elements. And
it's a good way to put it.
You know, you're only in control of like your tiny part of it. So everyone has to come together and have a unified goal or vision. And that's difficult too, because you've got great people who can add value, but it's interesting.
Yeah. But that's nice to hear that you realize there's still things you had to learn.
Yeah.
We're constantly evolving and learning. What's coming up next for you?
I'm shooting a show in New Zealand at the moment. It's actually New Zealand's first sitcom.
How exciting.
Which is funny, because New Zealanders, we're quite dry by nature and quite sarcastic.
I was surprised to hear they don't have sitcoms there.
No, we do a lot of dramedy stuff. We do have, I would say, comedy, but it's always kind of like either dark or very dry or wackadoo. So to create this like kind of multi-cam, not laugh track, but hybrid, I would almost guess, like high-paced comedy. Because New Zealanders don't speak fast by nature as well. Like, we're funny because we're like, oh, yeah, cool. You know, just very whatever. So it's a fun, exciting challenge to be part of. I'm shooting that at the moment. We've done 2 episodes. We have 6 more to go. So I go back to New Zealand tomorrow to do that.
So you're commuting. You're going back and forth from New Zealand. Wow. That's got to be tiring.
But I feel like all I've done is complain. You're a wonderful listener. I'm like, you're right. Everything is so hard. No, it's not. It's great. But yes, flying across the world and back.
That's exhausting.
Every week is a little exhausting. But it's a lot of fun. So yeah, I have that. I'm developing a couple of shows at the moment as well. Doing hosting and other things. And
Is the show supposed to come out?
It comes out in July, so comes out pretty soon.
Exciting. Can you talk about your character at all? Or not yet?
Yeah, it's... that's my cat.
Aww.
He would like some attention, too.
Hi.
Hey, puss.
You want to be on the podcast, too?
He does. Just check everything out. I have this adorable, giant cat called Powder. He is here to come be part of the podcast. Yes, I know. Mommy's talking. My character I play, it's a small, this is Powder ripping off the couch now. Thank you, darling. It's set in small fictional town, New Zealand, and one of their sports stars becomes an All Black, which is our rugby team in New Zealand. So New Zealand, if you don't know, is huge on rugby. New Zealand lives and breathes it. The nation stops when there's an All Blacks game. So the small town New Zealand, this kid from our town gets picked to be an All Black, and so the town is basically riding his wave. I am his longtime girlfriend. Haven't really heard from him much since he's become a celebrity, but I'm fine. I run the kind of pub that was inherited to me, and a lot of my arc is based around I found this box that has a hook in it, and we think it's from the famous Croydon hooker. So I find out that I'm maybe like 4 generations removed serial killer. So I feel like I am potentially a serial killer, which makes no sense. But to my character, that's the logic, that perhaps I am a serial killer, which I'm not.
But this is a comedy.
It is a comedy. And it's hilarious. It's super fun. I mean, all of New Zealand's amazing comedians are part of it. So it's really
fun.
Cool. Yeah, and we have a lot of freedom to do improv, and which is great. and working with people that, you know, I dreamed of working with when I was younger. So it's cool to kind of come back and be able to hold my own, which is really cool.
Are we going to be able to see it in the States?
Sure. Probably.
Okay.
I'm sure that it will end up on Netflix or something else like that.
Sweet.
He's always pretty good at... We've got a great show called Casketeers. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah, it's a great New Zealand show about a funeral home where they're like, you know, having beers and then they've got to go pick up a body. No, it's an actual reality show. But
oh, it's
it feels
a reality show.
Because you're like, surely this isn't real. But yeah.
Oh my gosh.
If you want good insight into New Zealanders, watch Casketeers on Netflix. You will literally die of laughter.
I will add it to my queue.
Yes.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for making the time to doing this.
Thank you for having me. It's always a joy to chat to you.
It's a joy to chat to you, too. Good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
And that concludes my interview with Kim. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're liking the podcast, give us a follow. We are at Inside the Artist Radio on Instagram and Inside the Artist on Facebook. You can also get updates to new episodes on InsideTheArtistRadio.com. We are on all the platforms. You can listen wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to Inside the Artist. My name is Rachel, and we'll see you next time.